welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio Houston with our hosts from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Well...
Hello, hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Mandy?
Great.
Did you have a nice weekend?
Happy Monday.
And happy Monday to you.
I had a great
Thanksgiving
long week.
So you missed
Thanksgiving.
We had a whole Thanksgiving special last week,
mm-hmm.
right? So you missed that. And so I want to know, what was your favorite food this Thanksgiving?
It's so hard. All of it.
No, but you had a favorite dish.
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on.
Was your mom there?
All of it. My mom was there.
Did she make anything Cajun?
We always have Cajun.
Yeah, so tell me about it.
What did we have? So we had the turkey and the ham and the
dressings. Did you have a deep fried turkey or just a regular turkey?
We had a regular turkey and a jerk turkey. I guess it really
was. Oh,
wasn't
jerk
like
seasoning.
That,
yeah, yeah.
That
How about
Cajun.
Your dressing, the stuffing? What did you guys?
We had both. We had cornbread stuffing and rice dressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dirty rice. Is that what you're looking for?
We had the cornbread with andouille sausage and crawfish.
That sounds good.
That was fantastic, I must say.
Did you make it?
Ellen, my wife, made it. So, she did a lot of the cooking. I made this ice cream, though, for dessert.
Oh, that's right.
Ginger ice cream with a black sesame honey brittle. It was fantastic.
And you love making ice cream.
I do.
And for you to say that might have been your favorite ice cream
one of my favorites. It was really good. Yeah,
we
yeah.
need to try that.
My daughter made this pumpkin tahini pie with a chocolate crust. Fantastic.
Fantastic. You're not saying that because she's sitting right next to you, right?
No. I'd be saying that anyway. You know, I said this at work today. I was telling everyone. Yeah. So it was fantastic.
True.
So, hey, so welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back. We have lots of things to be thankful
for. We have a good
show.
We have a lot of things to be thankful. And, you know, Mandy, I'm thankful for you. That's you put in the day. You know, you come here every week.
That's right.
Mostly,
so do
right?
You. Mostly,
except you skip Thanksgiving, and you know we speak out for kids, right?
That's
so,
right.
Hey, we're going to start off today's show with our Datahead segment. Datahead is the director of Early Childhood Initiative. Shay Everett is going to be here. The number, Mandy,
mm-hmm.
are you ready? The number 43.
43.
What do you think? Is that how old you are?
I don't know. Nope. That's not the number.
No,
but
no.
We encourage everyone to stay tuned and find out.
How old are you, Mandy? You're like 28, 29?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
And then after Datahead, we have a special guest in
the
studio
from New York City, straight from New York City.
Jenny Sanborn.
Comedian Jenny Sanborn is
Whee!
Here.
And she'll be talking about empty nesters. I'm very curious about this. So Jenny has been visiting you for a while. You are actually an empty nester.
We're empty because the minute Jenny left for college, Jenny's my daughter, in case you haven't guessed. But the minute Jenny left for college, and that's a number of years ago. How long ago was it that you left for college? Like 8 years, 9 years ago, right?
No.
Yeah. So. Do we have any sound for Ginny over here? Yeah. How many years ago was it, Ginny?
I think like 8 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, 8 years ago. Wow. 8 years ago, she left for college. So we're going to talk about that. Talk about your kids leaving for college. Talk about your kids leaving for work. What does that mean? Should they stay at home?
Talk about your kids coming to visit.
Coming to visit.
How does that work?
And how long do they last before they're like, yeah, I'm going to make you guys empty nesters once again. And pronto. So that should be good. We're also talking with Marion Camaro. She's with Raices. We're going to talk a little bit about immigration, family separation of the border, speaking a little bit about the migrant caravan. I don't know if you saw, Mandy, 60 Minutes last night, but they talked about sort of the devastation of this family separation. And, you know, you and I have talked about this a great deal. We've done press conferences, but it's still happening. There's still stuff going on. It was happening before we thought it was. This is horrible. So we'll talk to Miriam today from Raices.
Sounds good. And then today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion with us. Thumbs up or thumbs down. Should kids wear uniforms? Should children look the same from head to toe? Right?
And we're gonna talk about this because we've had some cities that have been banning some of these luxury coats or schools that have been banning these coats, schools that have banned sneakers, different types of sneakers.
Name brand
name brand sneakers, name brand coats. And so a lot of places are just saying, hey, everyone has to wear the same shoes. Everyone has to wear uniforms. Sort of interesting. Do you send your kids? Your boys don't like fancy clothes anyway, do they?
They don't care. I mean,
they're too young.
It is not too young.
They're boys.
I don't know, because they have friends who most definitely care.
Yeah.
Most definitely care. Wow. But I don't really talk to them about that stuff. Yeah. So they're ignorant.
We're going to bring in comedian expert Jenny Sanborn on that one as well. So she's going to help us out. She's here in the studio with us. Our final guest today will be Tommy Garcia Prats. He's a co-founder and general manager of Small Places. It's an organization that grows produce and makes it accessible to children, to families, and to the community. And it's always good to have like a farmer on the show, right?
You know it.
So just to talk a little bit about some of this stuff and
healthy eating.
Organic produce.
There we go.
Do you...
don't eat romaine at the moment.
No. No, it's not a good idea.
No.
It's not good for children.
Not right now.
Did you have a lot of vegetables around Thanksgiving yourself? Did you guys have a lot on the table?
We had some.
And in your idea, for your kids, the idea of vegetables is like a sweet potato casserole that has lots of brown sugar in it.
They like that. Okay. Yeah, My kids love.
Who doesn't? Okay, do they like candy? Then you like sweet potato casserole.
It's true.
Yeah.
But they prefer raw vegetables.
They do.
Like their number one pick is raw vegetables.
Crudités.
Is that what it is?
But, oh, Mandy, this is why we love you, right?
No.
Yeah, crudités. Yeah.
I mean, or it could just be raw vegetables, not cooked.
Raw vegetables, yeah.
Why do we have to put a fancy word with it?
Yeah, just...
You're so fancy.
Why call it what it is, you know? Why call it what it is? Let's just define...
Raw vegetables is calling it what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Raw vegetables, calling it what it is. See, Mandy, this is why you're the popular host, and I'm just the guy they put up with, right?
True.
So, okay. So it should be a great show, huh?
We're going to have a great show.
Yeah. Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio. This, as always, is a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? In between, Mandy, I want to talk a little bit about legislative agendas. Mm-hmm. We have the big legislative session coming up in the state of Texas starting in January. We have, it looks like we have a new Speaker of the House, right?
It does look that way.
So it looks good. Last time we asked you this, you had no idea, and then that night they decided.
But I don't think anyone knew, to be honest with you. Yeah. There were a lot of names being thrown out there, and that was a surprise. So we'll see.
That's great. So it should be good. We'll talk a little bit about that today, but I think, are you ready for a little date ahead?
Yes.
And Poetry in Motion on the line with us, Shay Everett, the Director of Early Education, Early Childhood Education Initiatives at Children at Risk. Shay, how the heck are you doing?
I am fantastic on this Monday afternoon. How are you guys?
Yeah,
we're doing really well. Shay has been traveling all over the state, right, talking about early education.
That is true, but I would put the United States in there.
The United States, right?
Yes.
Where is it tomorrow you're going to? Is it Arizona you're going to, Shay? Where is it?
I'm going back to Colorado.
Colorado, yeah. She's traveling all over.
What are the odds? Two conferences there in the same month.
Yeah, but I think this is interesting, right, Shay, is that Texas in many ways is at the forefront of early education in America, right? We see what we're not doing and what needs to be done in Texas sort of as an example of what needs to be being done in America.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right, especially when 1 in 10 kids, you know, in the country is born in Texas.
It has
big implications for our population.
Yeah. So the big number today, we're not talking about early education today. We're talking the big number, date ahead. What is it, Shay?
43.
Is that Mandy's age, Shay?
No.
Mandy is much, much younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, 43. What is it, Shay? What is 43?
It is the number of days until the 86th legislative session begins for Texas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So
that's good.
What does this mean for us, Shay, from your perspective? Put on your early education hat. What could happen this year at the state legislature in regards to early education?
Well, I think that we could make a lot of great strides toward increasing government efficiency and transparency around the many different programs it offers for children that are public services paid for by taxpayer dollars for kids birth to age 8. I also think we have some good opportunities around the child care workforce. They're currently very, undereducated and underpaid, making poverty wages. But they're teaching our children during arguably their most critical years of brain development. So we really need to do a lot to get that that workforce to be higher quality and to be higher wage earners themselves, because they're mostly women and they're mostly women of color.
Mandy, I was up in Austin meeting over at the Texas Education Agency. You spent a lot of time up there. Shay spent a lot of time up there. I feel a change, right? I feel like there's a little turn, right? People are paying more attention to early education. Do you think that that will be enough in this upcoming legislative session that we'll have some big movement on this area, in this area?
Do I think that more attention has been focused on it?
No, do you think we'll actually have movement legislatively? I know more attention is being paid, but is that going to translate into movement?
I hope so, yes.
I know you hope so.
I mean,
but
I think that there's a will to do it on some people. But it's complicated, right?
Yep.
So right now we're talking about child care, early education, and those crucial years, and that is key. And Texas is spending millions and millions of dollars, right? Almost $1 billion, really, on this. And so how can we improve the quality? How can we get the biggest bang for our buck on that?
Right.
But Texas has been talking about pre-K as well, and we have not seen a lot of progress like we would like to.
We thought there'd be more progress at this point, certainly on pre-K.
But I'm still hopeful again, because to your point, yes, there's been the School Finance Commission talking about it, and they're kind of shifting the conversation of, yes, early education is important, but the focus is third grade reading. So how do we increase those rates? Because we're doing a terrible job right now.
Shay, when we talk about early education at the state level, legislative-wise, I almost feel like our state legislature and everyone else is just waiting for Santa to deliver something. It's like they're not going to work on it. They're going to talk about it, but they're going to wait for Santa. Do you think this is the year that something actually happens, that you will end this legislative session thinking this was fantastic?
I'm pretty hopeful about it.
Yeah.
Though we do need to just be cautiously optimistic, because you never know what can happen. But given the kind of changes that we've had in the legislature and the kind of momentum that we're seeing at the state agencies and the governor's office, I think it's setting us up for success in a way we haven't seen before.
Wow.
You know, I'll tell you how we can do it.
Yes.
If our listeners join us and participate,
mm-hmm.
right? So we're up there having several conversations. I know a lot of our listeners have conversations with elected officials and public officials, but during session,
yeah, we need to tell them exactly which bills they need to call and support.
We will, and we do. But we can't stay silent. We need to let them know that children are a priority, and these are the key issues and areas that we want them to focus on.
I thought what Shay said earlier, Shay, when you mentioned that this is arguably the most important time in a child's life, it's amongst experts, right? There's not even any arguing, right? We understand that this is the most important time in a child's life, and it's your biggest bang for your taxpayer buck if we do stuff for children at this age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It really is just one of those things that is the research shows us what to do, and it's a matter of us listening to the research.
Yeah. Very good. Shay Everett is the Director of Early Education Initiatives at Children at Risk. Shay, our last question. I know that Children at Risk has this long record of success. Mandy, how many you told me this the other day, 256 pieces of legislation we've gotten passed in the last 10 years. That's probably going to have a lot to do with the success this coming legislative session, Shay?
Yeah, I think so for sure. We have about 11 pieces of legislation right now, and like Mandy said earlier, we really do need help from our listeners. So our listeners can follow us on social media, on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, but mostly Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, you can also go to www.childrenatrisk.org/take-actions. That's plural.
Take.
So you
take
can go to our
for children.
And sign up for our email alerts as well.
That's
yeah.
where you can go.
Yep.
Very good. Shay, thank you for all the work that you do, and keep it going for children.
For children.
All right. Take
have
care,
a good
Shay.
One.
Talk
Safe
to you
travels.
Soon. Bye-bye. All right. So you're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Pacifica Radio. And Mandy, you ready for a little bit of empty nesting?
I am so ready for this.
Very good. I am too, right?
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
All right, in the studio with us is New York comedian Jenny Sanborn, member of the famous Fight Club comedy troupe up in New York City at Upright Citizens Brigade. Jenny Sanborn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dad. How are you doing? Let's just make it just a little more obvious that you're my dad. Can you do that? Can you do that for your listeners?
Oh, I could do that. I could do that.
I shouldn't challenge you on that.
Oh, come on. The door is wide open.
I know.
The door is wide open, and I know that, you know, Bob, I know he's thrilled to have you on the show today. He talks about you often, but
all
this
the time.
Morning when he was saying, and Jenny's going to be on the radio show. And so I found it really interesting that the topic was going to be empty nesters. Tell me, how did this come about?
Well, I think my parents are experts on empty nesters because they had to...
Go through it ourselves, right?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
And it's just me, so it wasn't a gradual transition. It was a total 180.
So Jenny, I wanted to ask you, the day that we dropped you off at college, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like a big day, and you were worried that we were going to start crying and stuff, so we tried our best, though there were a couple little tears, but we came back to Houston. We dropped you off. You were at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi. We mm-hmm. dropped you off. We came back, and we decided to go grocery shopping, and we stopped in the middle of the grocery store, and we just left our bag, and we went to the car and cried. We missed you so much. But from your perspective, because we hear this from parents all the time, right? The minute mm-hmm. that all the children are gone, you think it's going to be a party, but it's very hard. The transition's very hard because you've been a big part. Children have been a big part of the parents' life for so long.
You didn't know what to buy at the grocery store.
We didn't. There's no one dropping in all these snacks. No, we're not going to get that. No, that wasn't happening. So it was very hard. From your perspective, though, from the child's perspective, how hard was that early separation? Or were you just enjoying life and being away in college?
I think it's different for the child, certainly, especially being dropped off at college. If you're being dropped off for your freshman year at school, you know, the school knows what they're getting into. They're ready to overwhelm you with orientation events and new student parties, and then school starts right away.
Yeah.
So it, you know, I certainly had times where I was feeling homesick, but I...
You stayed busy.
I had a full plate constantly. But I remember when I moved... to New York right after college, you know, I had a plan and a goal, but I didn't have a job when I moved there.
Right.
So, that's when I started to realize like, oh, I'm on my own. I'm not at home now.
Yeah.
And so I think that's when it maybe hit
the
me the
real
hardest.
World hit. Yeah.
But at, you know, I was a little older then, so it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to deal with it a little bit better, but
yeah.
And so were your parents always reaching out to you?
I think
and
I
is that a good thing if they were? Were you?
Yeah.
It could go either way, right?
I'm a big texter.
It's all about texting.
With mom and dad. And so I remember there was one day where I had nothing to do, and I called my dad, and he was like, well, just, you know, go walk around the East Village. Check out this new ice cream place I read about. And that's what I did. And that's what I do every day now.
Thanks.
But I think it is interesting, right, when you move off onto your own and you sort of drop also the apron strings of college, the apron strings of your parents, and now you are off and working on your own. That can be daunting. And by this time, your parents have sort of adjusted, right? They have gone through the empty nest of you going to college. And so was it hard for you to get back into it, Jenny, in terms of understanding? I mean, I guess parents are going to be there whenever you want. But you know, did you ever feel like calling your parents all the time, it was a big deal?
No, I
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah.
I think I called my parents all the time anyway because – I'm an only child, and I'm very lucky to have a good relationship with my parents, and it's not super weird for me to call every day like it might be for other families,
mm-hmm.
but
And they're excited to hear from you. So I have a question right now, especially over the holidays, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's Thanksgiving where families come together. Some mm-hmm. family members are excited to see the siblings or the extended family. Not so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for the parents, Bob, this goes with you as well, yeah. right? So you're used to having your routine, but then all the college students come back in or your daughter's yeah. coming back from New York for a week. How is that adjustment? Is it like vacation or is it a little bit difficult? And Jenny, you're used to being on your own, but mm-hmm. I mean, you're in their house now.
I am. I know. It's weird that it's not my house.
Yeah.
Mandy, are you familiar with the Saturday Night Live sketch Back Home Ballers?
I've heard of it.
What a treat. Look it up when you have a chance.
Okay.
That is very much my
So this experience. Is daughters coming back home and just getting whatever they want. That's
is that
no
what happens?
That's no valet. That's my daddy.
Oh.
You know, he's carrying my luggage for me and stuff. And so I think there's always a disruption in the routine, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the kids come back. But it's so welcome, right?
Right.
It's like you have your kids, your offspring are there in the house. So it's a big deal. And I think also, children mature, right? I think, you know, Ginny has been out of college now a couple of years, and you tell the difference. You know, there's less tension, you know, like there might have been little fights, and you still love each other, but there were little fights. That sort of, you don't see that as much anymore, Ginny. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would. I've been home for Thanksgiving. I'm lucky enough that I can take a longer Thanksgiving break with my job. And it's only now that you're starting to bug me.
Yeah, and it's been a couple days. Right
and then
now
it's time to go.
Now it's time to back.
So let me ask you this. This is a big thing. You know, parents always want to know that their kids are doing well. They want to know what the career plans are. Does that drive you crazy, Ginny? Not just from parents, but all the friends wanting to know, because you're a comedian, wanting to know what that career plan is?
Yeah. And, I wouldn't say it drives me crazy because when it comes to young people making a plan for themselves, I am certainly the outlier in that equation, trying to pursue a career in the arts. But, you know, when I talk to friends who have much steadier jobs and have great health care, I don't feel pressured or anything by that. I'm certainly very attracted to that stability. And I know, Dad, I've called you and Mom and talked about this stuff to you because it can be, I'll have that moment of like, am I making the right choice? What's going mm-hmm. on? But I think what's great is that you guys, instead of just sort of pushing one way or the other, is you just sort of listen and you support every idea that I have. And it's, you know, you let me figure it out on my own.
Except Mom doesn't want you to move to L.A., right?
Mom doesn't want me to move to L.A.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
She's just following her passion.
So my daughter lives in New York.
I didn't know this was a deal.
My daughter lives in New York City, but according to my wife, L.A. is like, that would be a really hard place to live.
That's interesting. Are you wanting to move to L.A.?
I mean, maybe. I have some friends who have moved out there.
A lot of comedy there.
Yeah,
right?
That's where them jobs are.
Yeah.
Mom.
Talking about stability.
Hey, Ginny, will you stay put when we do thumbs up, thumbs down? Will you join in with us on that?
Hey, you got it. I mean, you're my ride, so.
Yeah. That's it. So, hey, coming up, we're going to be talking with Miriam Camero. She's with Raices, and we're getting her on the line now. Ginny, as we move forward and you think about advice that you would give to other teenagers and to parents around empty nesting,
mm-hmm.
What advice in terms of, from your perspective as someone who left and you were the only child, what advice would you give to parents that maybe we did or didn't do as parents as you left?
This is something that you did do that I think was a good idea. And it wasn't until later that Mom told me like her thought process behind this. But she said that, the first 1 or 2 years of college, she did not call me.
Mm-hmm.
She let me call her. And I think that makes a lot of sense because you're not overwhelming your child when they are embarking on this enormous new part of their life. But you're still fully there if they want to talk. Sometimes
so
three
she never
times
called
a day,
you?
Like me.
Three times.
No, she never.
Did your dad call you?
No.
Call you.
Or
neither
maybe.
One?
I can't really remember.
I think if we needed to, we would. But the idea was let Jenny call. But we did catch on her MOs, right? So if she was like, if she had a new boyfriend or if she was like engaged in something, we might not hear from her as often as we're used to hearing from her. And so we would just say, oh, something's up in Jenny's life, right? And we just knew. And that's still sort of Jenny's MO to date, you know, which is when she has a new boyfriend. Okay, yeah, all bets are off. We're not going to hear from her as much. We'll still hear, right? We'll still hear, and we'll get texts and so forth, but just not as much. Mm-hmm. So
she's busy.
Interesting yeah. stuff,
so many
right?
Boyfriends.
Yeah, Jenny Sanborn, comedian from Upright Citizens Brigade up in New York City. Thanks, Jenny, for being here with us. Stay with us,
thank
and
you
you'll be able to
is there
join
any
a round
like
table.
Deep dark scoop you want to share with everyone listening? I mean, I'm just allowing
deep,
you.
Deep, dark scoop?
Yeah. Mm. On your dad.
On my dad?
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah. You can think about it.
I'll
feel
think
free
about
to chime
it.
In anytime.
I'll pipe in.
Where's the dirt?
Yeah, I was going to say one other thing I wanted to say about empty nesting is that sometimes children will project the missing and the love onto the family pet. Like, we will hear all the time about how much Jenny misses our dog. A lot of projection going on there, I believe, right? So, but and you love coming home and you love being with the dog, right?
I do.
The dog ate your pancakes this morning, as a matter of fact.
Oh, boy. Did she ever.
Yeah. Ate Jenny's pancakes. Can you believe that?
Unreal.
And then later on, she got a little nap.
What?
She got a little carb nap.
Oh, that's carb right. Yeah, I told Dad that Penny took a carb nap.
Yeah.
All those pancakes. All right. Hey, let's go to our next guest. So on the line with us, we have... go on.
Así fue taxista allá en su tierra natal.
Miriam Camaro's with us. Miriam is with Raíces. A little theme music there. El Hielo by Santa Cecilia. That's one of your favorite songs, Mandy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
very
pretty.
Good. Miriam, how you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Very good.
Great. Happy Monday. Happy belated Thanksgiving.
Happy belated Thanksgiving. I am still trying to work off what damage I did on Thursday.
we all did too much damage, Miriam. That's the truth.
Oh, I know. And the worst thing is I'm the cook of the family, so I'm the only one I get to blame.
Oh, wow. Wow. Hey, Miriam, I wanted to give us an update on this family separation stuff that's going on the borders. We heard so much about it a couple months ago, and as you know, we did a couple of press conferences in Dallas and in Houston. The president said it wasn't going to happen, and then it was almost like the slow drip. We started seeing more families being reunited, but have they all been reunited at this point?
No, and the numbers change every single day, but I think from our latest numbers, which date I think about a month ago, it was still around 500 children were still being separated. And, I mean, a lot of it has to do with sometimes a parent is deemed ineligible to be able to pick up their child, and that is already very daunting to begin with. And other times, the family has to make that really serious decision if a parent receives a negative, credible fear interview and a child receives a positive, credible fear interview. Well, parents' option is now, I'm going to get deported. Do I get deported with my child and face imminent harm in our home country, or do I strand my child here in the United States and have them try out their case by themselves? It seems to me that's a very tough decision in either way. And
it's
really
like a
catch-22.
It's like a Sophie's choice, isn't it? Right? There's no good. There's no good answer.
Does that happen often? I mean, I'm sure that it does, but like percentage-wise, are we talking about 25% of the cases where parents have to make those decisions?
So every case is really case-by-case basis, but there is an appellate process for the parent, and Raíces really works really hard with families that are in the Carnes detention, family detention center, and really try to help appeal that. Back in, I believe, September or August, we had a calling for mental health professionals to be able to provide a mental health evaluation on a pro bono basis, because that can kind of give insight to the judge whether how their mental state is, considering that these are people who have experienced so much trauma in their lives that maybe sometimes trauma affects memory, or that they didn't really quite tell you all of their story and there's new information that needs to be said, and that their story is consistent. It's just that imagine me asking any one of you, give us your life story.
Yeah. So,
I mean, where do you start?
Yeah, it's tough. Give me an idea. I mean, I think there's, you know, the news has been overwhelmed with this discussion of immigration. And it seems like we forget the fact that these families are coming over. They're basically presenting themselves to border agents and they're asking for asylum. So it's not like they're trying to sneak into the country. It's not like they're on their way somewhere else and they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to move into sort of a lower echelon of society. They're asking for asylum. We've sort of forgotten to talk about that, haven't we?
Absolutely. And I think that's always just one of the biggest responses that we get. And especially because, you know, it's kind of like wait in line. I'm an immigrant. I waited in line too. You should too. And in fact, they are. And we have people that are lining up to try to ask for asylum that have been up there all the way up to a month. Some have been several months, not currently, but in the past we have seen people that have been turned away and have been rumored that Customs and Border Protection agents have told them we are no longer accepting asylum applications, which is in complete violation mm-hmm. to a lot of the treaties that we have had in the past, where we're going to swear by saying that we can and we will be receiving asylum seekers. And, I mean, I think this is just always something to really reflect on, is that, you know, if someone does try to come through the outside of the formal legal process of going through the lines, we have to remember, ask that follow-up question as to why. Are they being trafficked? Are they fleeing from imminent danger at that current moment? And, in fact, a Customs and Border Patrol agent is telling them to wait for a month, several weeks, until their case is being processed. And yet someone is still trying to actively attack them. You know, we need to remember to ask and really try to understand from their standpoint why they are fleeing and why they are feeling that they have that immediacy attached to it.
Where are we going? So in your opinion right now, one, are things getting better? Or do you think that they're just staying the same? And I know that there's some particular issues that are a challenge with the mass release and bus station problems. But I feel like people really came out, said we have to put an end to this. They're trying to get things better for families.
The family separation.
Yeah. Do you think it's working?
Well, it's funny. I mean, when we first got in touch about earlier this month, what we were attacking at that current moment, or what we were really in that crisis mode, was because we were anticipating the mass release, which we've had one back in December of 2016, where we would have maybe 60 to 100 families be released from the Karnes Residential Center a week. And then we started getting people being released, 50 to 60 families being released per day. And we saw that there were huge coordinating travel plans. If people were in transit and their buses didn't leave for a day or two, we had temporary housing. We had problems with storing donations, trying to figure out how we can help these families that are in transit to reunite with their family. And then we flash forward to now, where just yesterday we had families be tear gassed by Customs and Border Protection.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that I've given up trying to predict mm-hmm. when it'll calm down. I don't anticipate it calming down anytime soon. I think that right now the United States is trying to have everybody remain in Mexico, and although that seems to me that's unrealistic and unconstitutional
yeah.
to not allow people to come in. I think we're going to be facing other issues once they are going to be their asylum applications are going to be processed and they're going to be detained. That's just going to be another beast to kill. And then after that, it'll be, well, what court decision or what asylum claim are you now going to limit again, since they just limited domestic violence this last year?
You know, it's so interesting that all of this has become such a political hot issue without people, without politicians really taking the time to solve this problem, right? It's too volatile of an issue. It revs people up so much, bases of the part of each party, that people aren't spending the time that they need. I mean, our life, your life, the life of these children would be so much easier if we really just had good laws that everyone could follow, right, Miriam?
Oh, absolutely. I think the children should never be used as a pawn to push a political agenda. I mean, it was wrong during family separation time, and it's wrong now. It'll always be wrong. It's a disrespect to human rights. And I think that we really need to remember that we are dealing with people here. We are not dealing with numbers or distant stories. This, especially for us here in Texas, I mean, this is something that's very immediate as far as physical sense. These are people that are within our community that have been affected by that.
Miriam Camaro is a case manager with Raices. Miriam, thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and thank you so much for being on Growing Up in America.
Thank you so much for helping spread our word for our clients and empowering them to continue on further.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
We keep doing it. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. And Mandy, just heartbreaking stuff, right?
It is. It's so heartbreaking. And there's a lot of people who are coming together, organizing to try to help those families as well. So we're thankful for all those people.
Yeah, let's see if this next, if in Washington, D.C., we might do some work around this. I wonder, right? Yeah. It seems hopeless, though. There's a lot of these issues that just seem hopeless, but this is one we need to solve. All right, you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down? I'm ready for a little thumbs up,
you
thumbs
know it.
Down. There we go. Look at that. Boom. All right, Mandy, what do we have today? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right, so today we're talking about uniforms.
Uniforms.
At schools, should kids look the same?
And we're talking about this because we had this very robust conversation today at the staff meeting. What are these goose down coats? What's the name of these coats that people are like, $1,000 coats that some schools have decided? Do you know what I'm talking about, Ginny?
Canada Goose,
right? No, And these are real expensive coats, is that right?
Oh, yeah. They're like maybe $1,000 a pop.
That's
or more,
right?
Yeah. And so some schools are saying, no Canada Goose. We're not going to allow these jackets anymore because some people have them, some people don't. And it sort of made us go on. What were you going to say?
Well, and that's kind of where I stopped it. Yeah. Like, yes, it's going on in New York, but
it's not happening in Houston.
The real world, how many people can afford $1,000 jackets? Normally, and that's especially not an issue in Texas, where we don't hardly ever wear jackets.
But in Dallas, they do.
But in Dallas, yeah, but not that much. Amarillo, probably they do as well. I don't think they're wearing it. But
the fact of the matter is that it's happening in schools. Kids are wearing some of these sneakers that cost a lot of money, and some schools are banning those. We had one staff member say, when I went to school, everyone had to wear the same thing, even the same shoes. Everyone had to wear the same shoes. What do we think about that? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Uniformity in the schools, uniforms in the schools. Maybe two different questions, right? Uniformity and uniforms. But let's let people call in.
713-526-5738. 713-526-5738.
So, Mandy, what do you think? Automatons in the school? Should every child be wearing the exact same thing?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that uniforms are nice. We don't want a distraction.
Do you have uniforms?
In the school.
Do your kids have uniforms right now?
No, not right now. But they did. They actually did at like childcare. Childcare had uniforms, which I found very interesting. But I know that there's a lot of public schools that require uniforms. I wouldn't have a problem with it. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think when we start nitpicking on, okay, but let's make sure that they're not wearing an expensive jacket, or let's make sure that they're not wearing expensive shoes. Kids, if they want to stand out, are going to find a way to stand out, right? So maybe it's the jewelry they wear. Maybe it's the makeup.
Haircut.
I mean, the haircut. So there's, where do you draw the line? I don't know. But I think also part of it is because you don't want distractions, right? And I think it's easier as a parent. But you also just want it to be appropriate. So when I went to school, it wasn't, you know, some people had uniforms because kids were showing up to school with profanity on their shirt. That's not appropriate. You know what I mean? Or the pants weren't being worn correctly. And that's what you don't want. Or girls' shorts were too short and whatever. Although, I don't know. You can look at some of those uniforms, and those skirts can be pretty short as well. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm fine with uniforms.
Let's go to the lines. We have a couple callers. Johnny, you're on the line. How you doing, man?
Done better, done worse.
Yeah, how was your Thanksgiving, Johnny?
I don't celebrate holidays like that. I'm well beyond that.
Yep, okay, I got you. I got you. So what do you think of this uniform thing?
Well, I went to a Catholic school for 9 long, suffering years, and we had to wear uniforms, black shoes every damn day.
Yeah.
Had to go to church every day except Saturday. So I could argue against the uniforms, but when you really think about it, the reasons for or against uniforms, you can debate. You can debate the same arguments for both.
Yeah,
with the uniforms or without.
Yeah, you can.
For example,
yep,
in our school, you could tell who the poor kids were or the slovenly kids were. This one guy named George, whose last name I will not share. He is not Bush, a different George. He was always sloppy. His hair was always sloppy. He looked like he smelled. He looked like he wore the same gray pants every day. Maybe he couldn't afford a second pair of pants. Who knows?
No, that's right. That's
but
right.
We make assumptions as kids because kids are cruel.
Yeah, that's true. But I can tell you, though, that I was a poor kid in school, and wearing that uniform allowed me to sort of blend in with everyone else, right? This whole idea that even if I, you know, George maybe wore his pants over and over again, but, you know, my mom could wash those every night if she needed to, but it would be the same pair of, and she shouldn't have had to wash them, by the way. I could have washed them. But this idea was
now
that.
Now you tell me. She's going to spank you.
Yeah, exactly.
She's afraid that you were going to leave the pen in the pants.
But to me, that's the big advantage to uniforms, right, is that all kids depend it doesn't matter what income level you're coming from, that you're all wearing the same thing. Mandy, I think you're right, though. Some kids will stand out. They'll figure out a way to stand out. But by and large, Johnny, right, by and large, boys don't usually make a big scene around this stuff.
That's what you think.
Okay, okay.
Let me tell you, just George.
Yeah, George.
He always wore his tails out. He never tucked the tails of his white button shirt into his gray pants.
Uh-huh.
That was another issue. His mother probably had no idea what he was doing. Well, maybe she didn't care.
Yeah, that could be. Very good. So are you thumbs up or thumbs down on uniforms, Johnny?
I could take them or I could leave them. They're kind of a pain because in Catholic school you have to wear black shoes with them. You can't wear sneakers. If they allowed me to wear sneakers, I would have been okay with them. A little individuality, a little bit of comfort.
Very
We're
good.
Kids.
Thanks, Johnny.
All right, Johnny. Thanks for calling in, man. Take care. All right. And let's go to Jesse is on the line. Jesse, how you doing?
Finding yourself, sir.
Very, very good. So, Jesse, thumbs up or thumbs down on this whole idea of uniforms?
Thumbs down. I mean, everyone made a pretty good argument, even at the beginning of the segment.
Yeah.
Either way, hygiene. I mean, your self-appearance.
Yeah.
Parents, do they care?
Yeah.
I mean, you can sexualize it as well, the uniform. And then what's so funny is if you work in a school and you're calling the parents, you know, to let them know, oh, I bought your child, you know, a shirt or some pants, they get offended because, a teacher, you want your kids to look good and the other kids are making fun of the child because they're not, you know, being kept up with because of the parent. And we don't know their situation. So, like, I mean, y'all hit it on the head.
We
really don't know. It's your clothing.
Yeah.
So we need to practice hygiene, all in all.
Hygiene. Hey, Jess, thanks for calling.
All about the hygiene.
Exactly.
There you go. What do you think, Jenny? I remember you showing up sometimes in a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jenny, you had to wear a uniform, right?
I did. I had to wear a uniform. I am very pro uniform.
Yep.
I think, and this could you guys may have talked about this on a previous show, and I might be.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Entirely, but I think dress codes in schools can be very sexist, and so I think if you wear uniforms, that's something that you might not have to deal with. And speaking from the perspective of a lazy person, it's very helpful when you're getting ready in the morning.
So talk a little bit more on your statement that it can
sexist.
Be sexist.
Yeah.
Well, I see so many stories about. You know, girls getting in trouble for wearing something that, like, revealed too much shoulder or too many inches above the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always, the reasoning is always that it's too distracting for the boys. And this is maybe not all schools,
mm-hmm.
but these are the ones that are in the news. And it just makes me so sad. And I, I am pro-uniform, but I'm also very pro-self-expression. And if that's the way these girls are trying to express themselves and they're just getting in trouble for, you know, being accused of overly sexualizing themselves, and that's just not the case.
And it's just their way. It's the same as George and is leaving the tail out. It's his way of getting attention. And if that's, you know, the girls aren't necessarily sexualizing, but they're trying to get attention, right?
It's probably maybe one or the other. So. There's a fine line there, probably. Yeah, yeah. Some aren't. And some of them, like, maybe they're wanting to, but if you're 14 as a parent or school, is that okay?
Yeah.
That's what they're doing? No.
I got in trouble for having my skirt too short.
Oh, really?
And I certainly wasn't trying to sexualize myself or any way.
That was just unfortunate because my mom had a hard time. I just have long legs.
Me too.
And so it's like it's really hard to find clothes. It's not that it was too short. Yeah. There's still plenty of leg there.
And
it's just
when you're a high schooler, sometimes just, you know, you want to you want to feel good about yourself when you go to school. And if it's a short skirt, then
Mandy,
then
thumbs up,
it.
Thumbs down on
thumbs
uniforms.
Thumbs up to uniforms.
Thumbs up to uniforms. Ginny, thumbs up.
Hard thumbs up.
Hard thumbs up. I'm a big thumbs up, too, just because of the egalitarianism of the whole thing. Hey, you ready to talk a little bit about farms?
Yeah.
I love this whole... Don't have some different kind of fire. And when the darkness comes, let it inside you. Your darkness is shining. My darkness. On the line with us is Tommy Garcia-Pratz. And Tommy is the co-founder of Small Places, which is a little community farm. And Tommy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How you doing?
Very, very good. Great. So tell us a little bit about your farm, Small Places.
Yeah, we're a unique spot here in Houston. We're just in the east of downtown, maybe about 3 miles, and we lease an acre and a half of land, and we grow seasonal vegetables, and we sell them on our farm to a farm stand. We do something else called a CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture, where people, you know, buy a subscription from the farm for a few months and receive a weekly bag of produce, and we go to the Urban Harvest Farmers Market as well.
And if I were to...
On top of that,
yeah, go
we
on.
Do classes and field trips, and we host events.
And you work with a couple of area preschools as well, right, focusing on children?
Yeah, there's a few preschools in our area that we've partnered with and do a lot of work with. One is NEPA Lorenzo Early Childhood Center.
Oh, sure.
Which is actually the first HISD Early Childhood Center in Houston.
Yep.
It's literally like 3.5 blocks from the farm.
So tell me, what kind of difference or change have you seen since you started this farm in your community?
I think more people just interested and engaged in the topic of health. And I think they come to us for questions and looking how to find ways to be more healthy. I mean, I heard earlier in the show you were talking about, you know, the biggest time to, or the most valuable time to invest is like early in your, when you're young.
Yeah.
And it's from a health perspective as well. When we're feeding kids and exposing them to things when they're younger, they're developing habits that by the time they're, you know, 15, 16, 18, 22, those are things that they know how to be healthy because they've been exposed to healthy food and how to use it and things like that. So we have a lot of people who find the farm because they aren't healthy.
Tommy, when you look at your farm and you look with some of the kids, what some of the kids are doing, I mean, are kids able to sort of discover new things when they're working in the garden, when they're working on a farm, when they're eating the food that they're helping to grow? What's the change in children when you see some of that stuff happening?
So we have a lot of field trips from preschools that come out. We had a group of 76 and 7-year-olds come out about a week ago. And it's really for us is just exposing them to new tastes, to new flavors, exposing them to being outside, really engaging and exciting their senses, because for me, that's what a lot of farming is. It's just growing up as a native Houstonian and not learning about these things. When I got into farming, it's just so exciting and new, and it opens up a lot of worlds for you. So that's kind of when we have kids out, really just kind of opening their world to food actually tastes really good. You can grow it yourself and pick it out of the ground, and do different things to make it taste even better.
So this is a conversation about farming that I feel like has really picked up over the last 10 years, right?
So,
you have the city who's looking at how can we have more produce and farm land there. And then schools, right?
Gardens, community gardens
and gardens at schools. And part of it is, okay, here we have this food, you can make it, right? But what do you do? And so then you're teaching people about recipes and going on. Are you collaborating with any of those folks, Tommy, in regards to the community?
Like Brighter Bites or Recipe for Success, some of those guys.
Is it something that can be expanded across Houston area?
Yeah, I think a big challenge for us is like trying to get people to understand that it requires an investment. So, you know, we just partnered with Austin High School, who got $10,000 to one of their leadership classes do a project for their community.
Yeah.
And health is such an issue on the East End here, and just access to produce that they ended up using that $10,000 to build five community gardens at five different elementary schools, which is awesome. But I think we need to understand that, you know, those need upkeep, and the people who want to engage need to be trained and educated as well. And I think there's a lack of investment and understanding, like, in the people who need to do the work to help teach and help maintain and help grow these spaces.
Hey, Tommy, if I were to be a member of the CSA, the community garden.
Community-supported agriculture.
Yeah, community-supported agriculture. What would I receive this week if I were a member? What's the produce that I would be getting this week in my little allotment?
Yeah, of course. So we do two sizes. We have a half share for like a smaller family or one or individuals, and then we have a full share.
Yeah.
Which is for a larger family or someone that can eat a good amount of produce.
Yeah.
I'll give you like a full share example. We'll get probably about a pound of sweet potatoes this week. We've got a head of lettuce, a bunch of kale, some radishes, turnips, what else? And probably a couple heads of bok choy.
Bok choy, wow. And do you find that I belonged, I was up at Hampshire College for a while in Massachusetts, and I belonged to a community garden.